Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles. I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
Okay, I got a couple of questions for you. Are you making six figures but still using your parents' Netflix login? Or are you spending more money at Starbucks than you are saving in your 401k? Look, if you answered yes, there is absolutely no shame in that. But you might be what's called a Henry. That's a high earner, not yet rich. On today's episode, Gideon Drucker is dropping some serious knowledge about what being a Henry might mean for you and your future. And more importantly, what you can do now to begin changing that course.
You're listening to Millennial Money with award-winning money expert and serial entrepreneur, Shauna Compton Game, where we flip the script on the old school approach to everything your parents never taught you about money. Each week, Shauna creates a safe space by talking with special guests from around the world about money wellness, entrepreneurship, traveling like a boss, and what makes millennials tick. Unique stories, trailblazing perspectives, tips, tricks, and everything there is to know about money. Find it all here as you uncover your money story and unlock the life you want to live. Pretty cool, right? Here's Shauna, money expert, Indiana Hoosier, and burger aficionado.
Everyone knows that putting money aside in savings is really important. But then what? Should you keep your savings locked in a CD for a higher rate or keep them liquid in a money market? Can your checking account help you save too? Or is it about creating the right combination? We believe real banking is a conversation. Let's talk about the savings options that are right for you. Learn more at sandyspringbank.com. Member FDIC.
It is always so much fun for me when I get to have another financial planner on the show because they get to jump in and be the expert and I get to just ask all the questions that you actually want to know. So Gideon's pretty cool. He's a millennial, a third generation advisor at his family's wealth management firm, Drucker Wealth in New York City. And he saw so many of his friends stuck in this Henry cycle that he decided to just write a book called How to Avoid Henry Syndrome, Financial Strategies to Own Your Future. As your friend here, I cannot shout about this message any louder. You have got to own your future. Don't let the interest rate the banks pay you, or whether the stock market is up or down, or whether you land that big promotion or a big new client, determine your financial future. You got to step up and you got to own your financial future. And it really starts with being smart with your cash and thinking about it a little bit differently from everyone else. So yeah, it's owning your magnificence and also getting smart at the same time. So whether you're a Henry now or you're going to be one in the future, buckle up for a great episode. We have so much that I want to talk about, but I want to start with something that I saw that you said that the millennial world is like teeming with smart, successful, motivated professionals, but most of them aren't on any sort of path towards a financially independent future, which I think for a lot of people is kind of like an eye-opening statement. So I want to just start like breaking it down. Like, what are we getting wrong as millennials?
Yeah, absolutely. And I wouldn't say that it's we're getting anything wrong. I think it's just a lot of us are waiting to really get started. So we're doing all the right things for how we want to be living day to day, right? Like, as you mentioned, we're making good money. We're comfortable. We're able to eat out and travel and do all these things we want to do. So life is good for the moment. But I think it's just having that little bit more awareness of what's coming down the road and making sure that we are setting ourselves up right now for 5 years out, 10, 20. So I think it's just about getting started and getting motivated to take that next step. So again, it's not anything we're doing wrong, but just kind of turning that corner and walking into that next stage of our lives.
So I know that a lot of people have this kind of, it's almost like a confusion syndrome. Like maybe they know that they're supposed to get started doing certain things, but it feels like there are so many different things and there's so many different podcasts and articles and voices out there about what you should or shouldn't be doing. So how do you even begin to figure out like what are those first steps? Like how would you tell someone to kind of, you know, motivate them to just start and fill in some of those places where maybe they're not doing those things.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, first off, I think all knowledge is power, right? You know, being able to educate yourself and the more you read, the more you learn, all that stuff is fantastic. But I think it really starts more internally of figuring out, you know, what are we trying to achieve down the road? Really, like, what are we passionate about? Right. What are our goals? And then actually being able to articulate them and maybe even write them down and saying, hey, you know, here's what I want to have my own place in 5 years, or I want to make sure, you know, my little kids, I want to make sure they're able to go to college, you know, without student loans the way I had to. And so we're setting ourselves up for the future. And just, I think being able to articulate that and saying, here are my goals, here's what I'm looking to achieve. Then comes the hard part of actually, you know, how do we make that a reality? But I really do think that's the first step, because like you said, it can be overwhelming to think about all of this, you know, financial jargon, financial stuff all at once. Let's break it down. First off, what are the goals? And then we move on from there.
I think it's so fascinating. You're a certified financial planner. I am as well. So we speak somewhat of the same language here.
Absolutely.
But I think it's interesting that whenever I would work with people, we would talk about this idea of goals, and that goals are the roots or the foundation behind your money. Like the goal gives your money a direction. Where do you want it to go? Otherwise, it's just going in all
right,
these
exactly.
directions and like probably not doing what you want it to do. But it's so fascinating that it's sort of like an aha moment for people, because it almost seems so simplistic, and yet it is the most important thing. Like you talked about, like regardless of income or what your job title is, it all comes back to that same idea of the goals and the vision for your life.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that even about just getting started, I had a couple in last week, mid-30s, doing really well, had a few kids, and they reached out because for all, you know, they're making money, they think they're saving enough, but they didn't have a plan. They didn't know, hey, what's this ultimately leading to down the road? So one of the very first questions I always ask is basically what we just talked about. Well, what are you trying to achieve? Like all this money you're saving and that you've accumulated, what's it all for? And it was almost as if, you know, as simplistic as it is, like the question kind of hit them in the face. They needed like a full minute to kind of gather themselves and say, yeah, I guess we really need to figure that out. Obviously, college planning for them was kind of, you know, one of the first ones. But then I think the more you get into that, it really sets a stage for everything you're looking to do. And it allows you to know, you know, maybe that you're not in bad shape. It doesn't mean anything's wrong. Like when I'm speaking with these Henrys, these high earners that aren't rich yet, it's really not that anything's wrong. They may be in fantastic shape. But like you said before, I like that word direction. It's just, you know, making sure you're in the right direction as you move through life stages.
Yeah. And I'm curious, like, do you, I mean, I certainly noticed this with couples as well. Like couples in general, it feels like maybe one person has this idea in their head and the other one has this idea and neither are communicating that. So when they come to a financial planner or someone to help them, it's just, it sometimes is kind of a little bit like chaos because,
yeah, a little bit.
You know, nothing has been communicated and they all have this, you know, separate vision. And I just keep coming back to you, like, one of the best ways that couples could actually like get on the same page is just to like have communication about money rather than kind of keeping it siloed.
Yeah, exactly. And I think even beyond just, you know, relationships or just even for an individual, you know, the way most people grow up, money is almost like a bad word, right? You don't talk
yes.
about, you know, how much your parents are making or what they're saving, or just really you're kind of unaware of what's going on in your family's financial world. We all grow up with different relationships to money, but it's also not something we really learn in school, right? How to balance a checkbook, what a mortgage is, difference between stocks and bonds, all these kind of basic financial concepts. You know, I always joke and I write in my book that to graduate high school, you needed to have known what like sine, cosine, and tangent are,
yeah.
right? If you're doing geometry or whatever that is, I'm probably going to get it wrong, which is kind of my point because it hasn't come up, you know, in the
yes.
15 years I've been out of high school.
Thank God, right?
thank God, because this would be a very boring conversation if that's what we were talking about. But we really, you know, we don't grow up learning about finance. So I think a big part of, you know, our roles as CFPs and planners is to make you more comfortable. That we should be talking about it and what are you excited about? You know, what keeps you up at night? And I think the more, whether you're in a relationship or not, or two people in the office or one, whatever it might be, to just have that openness. And I think that leads to a lot of, you know, great things down the road.
And I like that you touched on money story and that kind of like intrinsic, I don't know if it's like an ideology or thought pattern around money that we all grow up with, whether we're cognizant of it or not. It comes from our parents or whoever raised us, society, how we look at things. So you grew up in a family of financial planners. Like, what was your money story like? Were you talking about money at a very early age?
Yeah, I did. And I think that's what makes me maybe a little bit more aware of, you know, how important that can be. So I grew up, just as a quick background, my grandpa started our team, Drucker Wealth, and my dad's been running the show for 34 years now. And so I'm the third generation on the team.
Wow.
And as my dad likes to joke around, mostly joking, I think, and telling me once a week that as the third generation, I better not be the one to mess it all up. But, you know, we need to keep
no
me
pressure.
Honest. Right? Yeah, exactly. Keep me honest around here. So far, so good. But I think just growing up in that atmosphere, you know, we talked about client meetings at the dinner table. He did a lot of public speaking around New York City. So I grew up going to his workshops and just, you know, wanting to know everything about what he did. And I think that just set myself and my sister Gabby up. You know, we're fortunate in a lot of ways, but just to have that openness about money and that really commitment as soon as we started making money to saving it and knowing what do we want to spend it on? What are our financial priorities? That was just something like we grew up knowing, you know, even in high school. And I think that set the stage for a lot of what I talk about now with my clients.
Yeah, I like that. I like that for sure. And another thing about you that I thought was really interesting, you were actually a combat paratrooper in the Israeli Defense Forces. That's wild. So
I was. My mom totally agrees how wild it was.
How did you go from that to financial planning?
Right. So my family always, you know, we're Jewish and we always grew up, you know, really supportive of Israel. And I always did a lot of writing and public speaking, supporting Israel on my college campus. I went to Lehigh University and I kind of got to the end of college, always knowing I was going to come into, you know, our financial planning firm. I took like all the finance courses my senior year because I knew, you know, I could have been doing that in high school. I don't think they really let you, but I knew I wanted to come in here. But I kind of realized there was a thing I had to do, right, to really do my part for my brothers and sisters. In Israel, I felt like I had to walk the walk. Everybody in Israel has to serve. So that's kind of the tamped down short version of how I came into it. So right out of university, I joined the Israeli paratroopers. I was over there for 2 years. And then literally the end of my service, I would be on guard duty, you know, reading like, you know, Nick Murray financial planning books.
Wow.
And all these other authors my dad, you know, would give me. I can probably guarantee I was the only, you know, Israeli soldier on the border of Lebanon reading those sort of books to, you know, to pass the time. Not the most exciting read when, you know, in the middle of the night. Not that you're probably supposed to be reading to begin with. So I served over there for 2 years and then came back and joined the business. But it was an incredible experience. And I did learn a lot over there that I think prepared me really well for what I do day in, day out now.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious, like, what are some of those things that you think that you learned that you bring into what you do now?
So I'll start that by just sharing a quick story. So, and I wrote about this in the book, but one night we were on, you know, the border of Lebanon, Israel borders Lebanon in the north. And we had just gotten to this new base And my unit was responsible for taking over from the unit that was leaving basically that night. And it was about 2-3 in the morning, and I got stuck with the first guard duty shift. Whatever reason, you know, throw the American out there, whatever it might be.
Right.
But we had like a 5-minute security briefing of what was going on around us. By the way, my Hebrew at this point was, we can just say, not that great. I definitely missed a little bit of what they were talking about. But I get out there in the middle of the night, and I'm on, you know, along this fence, and I keep hearing noises that, as you can imagine, are just freaking the heck out of me. And, you know, all night, I'm, what's going on? What's going on? I'm looking out, trying to see anything. And then the next morning, we do this whole security, you know, brief. It's daytime, so we can see out. And I realized that in front of that guard post, you know, there wasn't another town for like 200 yards, and it was all goats with bells around their neck.
Wow.
So literally all I was listening to and getting scared about for 3 hours was, you know, goats walking around very slowly. Yes. Over the course of the night. It was ridiculous. And it was really, I was scared because I couldn't see and I didn't know what was ahead of me. And it kind of just gave me that perspective, that aha moment of a lot of what we do in planning is people get so, like we talked about, people get uncomfortable talking about money. And a lot of people don't really want to know what's up ahead because that can be, you know, that makes it all real. Right. Of knowing,
sure,
you know, am I going to be able to afford my kids college or retire when I want or change careers? And I think just having that perspective of, you know, the more information you have, the more you, you know, gain perspective of thinking more long term, it allows us to freak out a lot less in the moment and allows us to do what we need to do, you know, right now. And then I just think lastly, kind of that perspective and same type of thing, but that perspective of the future is going to come and we want to prepare ourselves as best as we can. You know, I spent a lot of weeks in the field training and marching and, you know, always tired and hungry. And while you're living in it, you kind of think like it's never going to end.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know,
right.
You're counting the minutes, you're looking at your watch, like, wow, this is brutal. When's it going to end? But eventually it does. And then you're on to the next thing. And you almost forget that, you know, how you felt in the moment. And so much of what I'm trying to do with my younger Henry clients is if I can get them to see, you know, they're 30 or 35 and I can see their life at 40 or 45 through retirement and just think a little bit more, hey, we're going to get there. And the more we do now to set yourself up, the easier it's going to be. I think that just that goes a long way. And that's really like my day in, day out goal here.
What a wild experience. That, I mean, I just can't even imagine what that must have been like. But I love the parallels. And you talk about your book, your new book, How to Avoid the Henry Syndrome. And I that might be a new word for a lot of people. I've certainly heard it a lot. But let's talk a little bit like what is a Henry? What makes a Henry a Henry?
Right. So a Henry, first off, is a high earner that's not rich yet. And my dad's favorite example of what a Henry is, if you know, you're making six figures, you're living comfortably, but you're still on your parents' cell phone bill or Netflix account, you might definitely be a Henry. That might be a personal shot at me. I'm not quite so sure. But, you know, so that's one way. But really, a Henry is you're making good money and you're living comfortably, right? You're able to travel a few times a year. You go to the gym you want. You go out with friends and you're kind of living this day to day lifestyle that no financial worries. You're not really thinking so much about day in, day out what you're spending, but you're also not really getting any closer to reaching that next level of your life. And again, that might be buying a home or buying a vacation home or kids' college or being able to, you know, I heard this last week of somebody saying, hey, I know I can't retire, you know, in 5 years. She was 35, but I'd like to be able to take some time off, you know, in the next 5 years and 6-8 months traveling out east. You know, how do we get there?
Yeah.
And so a lot of this Henry mentality is it's not about dollar and cents of, you know, what are you making? What do you have? But it's that I could be doing more. And you almost feel like you're running in place, right? Like all that income you're making, it's kind of just cycling through you without, you know, without you advancing to that next step.
Yeah. What are some of those risks that like a Henry type person is taking when they're just kind of, you know, month after month living the same life, having good cash flow, but like you say, like not advancing. Like, are there any sort of inherent risks in, you know, not maybe shoring up some of these things that you need to?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first most like obvious one is just that your income, you know, all the money you've made to this point almost doesn't matter anymore. I remember one of my earliest clients, he was, you know, in tech and doing really well. And over the first 5 years of his career, he really didn't save that much. You know, his accounts went up, right? The amount he was saving just because he was saving some money. And he figured, hey, you know, my checking account's going up. My 401k is going up. I'm in pretty good shape. But when we really got down to it, he was saving maybe 10% of his income. So what I did, I put on my whiteboard that I'm looking at right now. I said, here's how much you've made over the last 5 years. And again, he did well, you know, all in, it was probably close to $1 million over that 5 year period. And I said, here's how much you've actually, you know, taken home. Here's how much is in your pocket right now because of all that work you put in. and it was, again, 10%, it was close to 100,000. I said, all that money that you've made, like, you know, and I didn't say it in exactly this, you know, harsh of terms, but that money's really not there anymore, right? Like those long hours, those late nights, weekends, you know, because of how much we saved, that's, you know, we never get the opportunity to make that money back. And for him, just seeing it visually out and saying, wow, you know, that $1 million. And, you know, what do I have right now that actually, you know, prepares me moving forward? So I think that's the first thing, is just that opportunity cost of not focusing a little bit more on saving that extra 5% or having more of a plan for how you're spending money each month. You know, that's the first thing. And then, you know, the best thing we have going for us as Henry is, as high earners when we're young, is the power of compound interest, right? The eighth wonder of the world.
Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, the more time we have for our money to work on our behalf, my dad always says it's, you know, time in the market as opposed to timing the market, right? So compound interest means that your interest is making money on top of itself. So if we start out with $100, right, $100, and we make 10%, well, now we have 110 the next year. If we made that same 10% the following year, we're not making another $10, we're more making like 12, 13, because it's compounding on itself. So the more time we give our money to grow over the long term, right, when we're starting out at 18 or 22, the better it's going to do for us over time, just by the nature that we have more time ahead of us. And obviously, that, I'm not saying you're going to make 10% a year or anything like that. It's just a super easy way for me to do the math in my head.
Yes.
But you get the any number, you know, it's going to work out the more time.
I'm sorry, but I have the best dog ever. Her name is Winnie Stardust. She is a mini golden mountain doodle, full of life, and I would do just about anything to keep her happy, healthy, and safe. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. Your pet is part of your family, and you want to do the best for them. But vet bills can really add up. We jokingly keep telling Winnie she needs to get a job to pay for her vet bill. That's why you should check out pet insurance. And with ASPCA Pet Health Insurance, you can focus on the care your pet deserves and cover what matters most. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customized accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping to ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you are least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independent American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer, is not engaged in the business of insurance. Okay, friend, I want to know, what are your money goals this year? Are you saving to buy a house or maybe a wedding or a dream vacation to somewhere tropical? If that's you, please, please take me with you. Or maybe you want to just grow your emergency fund because, let's be real, life is expensive. I want to make sure you reach your goals, so you need Monarch. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Monarch is the top-rated, all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/etm. Here's what I love. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard. You can go between light and dark mode. You can create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up all of these automatic rules for your transactions and notifications, and so much more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving their product. Get this. They release updates every 2 weeks, and they even allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. This, my friend, is totally original. Plus, they will never sell your data to third party or show you ads. I think that's really important. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it is the top-rated personal finance app. And now, listeners of this show get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. That's monarchmoney.com/ETM for your extended 30-day free trial. The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince, and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like a million bucks wearing this cozy workout-friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/ETM for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/ETM to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/ETM.
It's Tuesday, and we've got another Ask Shauna. And this one comes from Brandon. And Brandon says, "Hey, Shauna, I'm a fan of the show, and I've been listening from way back in 2016. And I admit I have wanted to ask a question for a long time now, but I've been a bit shy," which is crazy because there are like a million Brandons out there anyway. So who would know that it's actually me? But the point is, I'm here now and I'm asking the question. I'm trying to figure out something. So I got a job offer from a new company, and they're willing to pay me about 20% more than my other job. Not great, but it's okay. The problem is that their benefits are terrible as far as health insurance, and they don't even offer a match on their 401k. My current company offers a nice 50% match up to 6%, so I've been able to stash away some really good money. I really like the new job offer, I mean the company, but does it make sense to walk away from good benefits just for a 20% pay increase? I know there are so many variables to this answer, but just curious what your gut reaction might be. Brandon, I'm so glad that you decided to ask the question. See, it's not that tough, right? Congrats on the new job. And you're right. This kind of is a tough question. I'm going to give you my gut reaction, my two cents, a couple of things to think about that will hopefully point you in the right direction. The first thing is, have you talked to the HR department at the new job to see really exactly what their entire benefit package would be like? Maybe they might offer some other good benefits that might make it enticing that you just aren't aware of at the time. And I know that sounds like an obvious thing, but sometimes I think when we get offered a new job, we think that we can't ask, hey, can we see the benefits package? Can we talk to someone in HR? And that can't be further from the truth. Those things are all possible, and they should be available to you. I think another thing to think about is, I'm thinking about this 20% salary increase. Are there any chances you could negotiate for potentially a higher salary? I'm not sure where you are in the process, but I really try to resell your skills to this new company and let them know that you really want this job, but you'd also be walking away from super good benefits to do so. And would they consider a 30 to 40% increase to make it work, to entice you to come over, whatever that language is for you that you feel comfortable? Have you gone back to them and seen if you can bump that 20% up just a little bit more, where maybe it might make a little bit more sense for you? And I always go back to this idea, this really old school idea of a pros and cons list, but I make pros and cons lists for all the big decisions in my life because there's something really powerful about looking at it on paper. So write down all the pros and cons of the old company versus the new company and see it actually in print in front of you. Then what I do is a trick I call the 1-2-3 trick. So I put a 1, a 2, or 3 next to each thing in terms of, number one, it matters to me a lot. Number two, I'm so-so about it, no big deal. And number three, I really don't like this thing. And once I've done that, then I go back and I look at my numbers, and usually that gives me a pretty good indication of what my decision should be. Now, just because you get that out on paper doesn't mean that has to be your decision, but at least you have the information. At least you know how you feel about it. And so you know that when you're making the decision, you're coming to it from a place of some sort of thought, right? You've really thought this one out versus just jumping at the new offer because of the 20% increase. I think actually your question is really smart because you're pausing and you're saying, does this actually make sense? Another thing is, of course, you could still contribute if the new company has a 401k, even if they don't have the match. And maybe you explore opening up a Roth IRA if you're within the income guidelines, or a traditional IRA, and stash away some more money if you have that available to you in the meantime. And who knows, maybe that company might change their policy going forward. I mean, I've seen companies who had matching programs in place for years, and then all of a sudden they took away the match. So I'm not saying that they'll suddenly magically add a match in, but I think what I'm trying to get you to think about is, how important is that to you versus, like you say, you really want to work at this new job? Is there a way to get the salary a little bit higher? Lots of different scenarios here, but this isn't a perfect science, but maybe you can get the new company up just a little bit higher to at least make that move make more sense financially. But this is such a great question. And Brandon, I can tell that you are really like dialed in because you're asking the right questions. You're thinking about this. You're trying to think through everything without just jumping on the first offer. So I hope that gave you just a little bit of guidance. If you're like Brandon and you're sitting there and you have a question that you want to ask, what are you waiting for? I don't even have to say your name if you tell me not to. I've done plenty of anonymous questions. So you can head over to the link in the show notes to ask your question, or head over to the podcast hub, mmoneypodcast.com. And right on the homepage, on the bottom of the homepage, there's an Ask Shauna section. Fill it out, because I cannot wait to answer your question.
I'm going to be real with you. Identity theft is on the rise, and you do not want to wake up one morning and discover that your bank account has been emptied, or you're overdue on credit cards you never even applied for. We talk about this often on the podcast, but you don't realize how much of your information is available to scammers on the internet and how susceptible you and your family are to identity theft and fraud. I know, it's scary. But now you can get your data removed with Delete Me. That's why I personally choose Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I just started using Delete Me and I got my regular personalized privacy report. I was shocked what they found and removed. It was pages of information about me that I did not want online. Here's how it works. You sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. I cannot tell you how relieved I felt to have Delete Me. And you know, it's also a great service for your parents or grandparents to help protect them from identity theft. Delete Me is not just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you do not want on the internet. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special price for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use promo code ETM at checkout. The only way you get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and enter code ETM at checkout. joindeleteme.com/ETM. Go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use code ETM for 20% off. In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in "Talkin' Money" under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin' Money under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank & Trust, member FDIC.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of The Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to The Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to The Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
A question I get asked a lot by listeners are like, okay, I have a strong emergency fund. I'm investing in my 401k, at least up to the match. I'm checking off like some of the commonly talked about right. boxes on my list. Like, what do I do next? Like, how do I figure out like where to go next? I mean, is that a conversation that really needs to be had with a financial planner or like a third set of eyes? Or, how do you evaluate from like that standpoint what direction you go into versus your money just going away?
Right. I think that's a great question. And, you're absolutely spot on that. A lot of people, if you're doing nothing else, you've never spoke to a financial planner, you've never seen the need, or you're not saving, additionally, you're probably, saving into your checking savings account each month and you have a 401k, right? Those are the two first things that everybody sets up with. I do a lot of public speaking around the city and I always ask, what's the very first investment account most of you started with? And the 401k is always the answer because it's easy, it's automated, you don't have to think about it. And I'll get back to that in a little bit because I think there's a key in that for how we want to do everything else. But the way we focus on thinking about saving money and how we want to be saving and where to is we think of it in our bucketing plan. Because I like what you said before about the time horizon of your money or what it's ultimately going for. That's right. The most important question that we can ask when somebody says, "Hey, I have $5,000 a month to save. Where should it be going?" And I'll say, at this point, I have absolutely no idea because we need to figure out what that money is ultimately going to be spent on. So we've broken it out in terms of three buckets. Now, later and last, as I like to call it, because depending on what that money is going to be for and the time horizon of when we're looking to spend it really dictates the sort of vehicles we want to use, the amount of risk we want to take, the amount of growth we can expect. So kind of to your first point, that now bucket is our cash cushion. It's the money that's sitting in our bank. We want at least 6 months of living expenses, sitting in the bank. So if life happens, things come up, that you can draw from that with no risk in the market or fees or penalties, anything like that, it's there sitting for you when you need it.
And what then, if you're what yeah. if you're one of those like chronic savers where I see this trend a lot where they maybe are a high earner, they have the 6 month living expenses, but they just keep saving kind of in the now bucket out of whether it's fear or not sure what to do. Is there a point? I mean, I know this is a broad, sweeping question, but is there a point where it's like, okay, you've saved enough in your now bucket and kind of your safe bucket, like maybe now it's time to branch off? Or is that just really different for each person depending on what they do, their situation, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, so I think both of what you just said is pretty accurate. So, first off, we say 6 months of living expenses. That's kind of the minimum. After that, it becomes about, well, how much do you need there just to be comfortable, right? Like just to let your head hit the pillow at the end of the night and let you sleep. So I met, a young woman last week that, for her, maybe her 6 month cushion was 40,000-ish, but she liked the idea of it being above 75. Right. It wasn't really a financial reason. It was just, it let her sleep at night. So I said, all right, well, that's exactly how much we need to keep there, because the more comfortable you are with your now bucket, the more we can do it with our later and last buckets down the road. But after that, and kind of on an ongoing basis, is we set up all of our clients with what we call our wealth creation account, which is making sure that right now, maybe you need 70% of what you're saving to go into that now bucket, right? But to your point of that person that's saving, too much to that now bucket, maybe in 6 months, we take a look at that wealth creation account, which we use to funnel into our three buckets and say, hey, you've now built up your now bucket to exactly how much you're comfortable with and how much you need. Now that $5,000 a month that you're saving into your wealth creation account, we can reallocate and redeploy more of that into your later buckets to accomplish more financial goals. So I think it's really important for people to know this is dynamic. It should always be changing. Of course, how much you have, in your three buckets or in your now bucket right now is going to be totally different than what it's going to be 5 years, 10 years from now. And as long as we're always changing to fit where you're at in life, I think we kind of outrun that risk of just sitting on too much in cash or just having too much sitting in the bank.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. I like the bucket approach, because I think it's something that I often talk about, wealth buckets. It's the same thing. It's something that people like visually can wrap their brains around. They know what a bucket looks like, exactly, and the theory behind a bucket. Walk us through a little bit like the later and last buckets. Like what would that look like for someone who's maybe, late 20s, 30s, maybe even like early 40s? Like what would those sort of buckets look like?
Right. And it's funny, like everybody I talk to, the buckets, like, yeah, we know the buckets. Of course, like this isn't, the buckets aren't rocket science. It's not like we invented this great thing, but I think a lot of people use it and it's out there because it's such an easy way to think about what our money is geared to do, like what the goals of it is. So that, that totally makes sense to me. And more people, the more I think just in our experience of using it, people get more comfortable knowing what each bucket is for. I would say our last bucket is, I think about those are our retirement accounts, 401ks, 403bs, Roth IRAs, IRAs, SEP if you're a 1099 or self-employed. And that's money that we really can't touch even if we wanted to until we're 59 and a half without penalties, taxes and all that stuff we want to try to avoid. So that bucket is really our most long-term growth-oriented bucket. Because if we're sitting here at 30 or 35 or 25 and we know we have 20 years plus, well, if the market goes down 6 months from now, that really doesn't affect us in that bucket really at all, because we know we have time for the market to rebound. So those retirement accounts, we like to stash away in that last bucket, and we can afford to take on the most risk because we bought ourselves that time horizon. That's for everybody. Obviously, in different amounts, we should be saving. Pre-tax and Roth is kind of a separate conversation, but all of that kind of fits comfortably for now in that last bucket. I think the later bucket and kind of that middle bucket that we talk about is really the most unique. And I think it's where we can come into play, as financial planners the most, because that's really what you're looking to do in the next 5-10 years. And that's going to be different depending on every person that's sitting in that meeting, right? If you're saying, hey, well, my kids are, 10 and 12 and college is coming up in the next decade. Well, that middle bucket, the way we're allocated, the way we're invested is going to look a lot different than somebody that are planning to have their first kid, next July. And they have 18 plus years to have it. So I think that soon bucket is the one that's most differentiated between, kind of where you're at. Obviously, for couples or families, college planning fits in pretty comfortably in there. Individual investment accounts may go in there. If you're looking to make a down payment on a home, maybe in 5-10 years, it would fit in there. I would say anything under 2, we're probably keeping in our now bucket. But again, to not ramble on that middle bucket, because I can keep going, I think that's the most, that's the one that you really want to make sure is most specifically tied to where you're at.
And I like that too, because it, like you say, I mean, it really is going to be different for every person. And I know that there's definitely someone who's listening who kind of keeps coming back to this question over and over again. So I want to answer it for them. Tell me a little bit, like, what exactly happens when you work with a financial planner? Like, is that something that is approachable for someone who's maybe not making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year? And like, what kind of goes on when you actually work with a financial planner like yourself?
Right. So I think that's a great question, because I think a lot of people, and especially a lot of young people, you know, they might be making great money, but in the back of their head, you know, they have this understanding that, well, if I don't have $2 million to invest right now, there's really no point in, you know, talking to a planner, or I don't, you know, they're not even willing to talk to me, which, you know, believe it or not, I hear that a lot. If somebody calls up and say, hey, you know, I don't know if I have enough. And I always try to get that off the table, because at least the way that we work, you know, the investable assets or how much you currently have is really irrelevant to the planning process. So that's kind of first off. And, you know, first off, if whether you need an advisor or not, you know, my dad always likes to say, and I keep quoting him, because most of what I say, I just kind of stole from him over the years. Anyway,
why not?
If he's got it, I sat in enough meetings when I was just starting out.
Hey, I hear you. I've worked with my dad too, so I speak your language.
Exactly. I need to give credit where credit is due. But he always says, if you know, if you have the time, the energy, the inclination, and the knowledge to do it yourself, you know, there are plenty of people that do that, and they seem to be in pretty good shape. What I always come back to is, you know, when I think about the most financially successful people that I know, the, you know, independent people that are later in life, typically, and I can only speak to myself, most of them got that way by focusing on what they do really well, specializing in that, focusing all their energy on that, and then hiring, you know, smart people that they trust, and that trust is really the most important piece of it, that they trust to handle the rest, right? It's why, you know, I have an accountant, or I don't do, right? I don't do my own taxes, yes, or cut my own hair, and I can go on and on. But I think our financial planning is probably, you know, worth, if, you know, at least as much as we're putting into those other areas. So that's why I would say, you know, and again, some people do it themselves and they're in great shape, but that's where I do think a financial planner is, to allow you to really focus on what you do well, spend time with your family, do all these things, and make sure that someone you trust and like, you know, is looking at the bigger picture, because you're kind of wrapped up in the trees. So that's kind of just on a high level. But I would say, as far as a young person, whether they're, you know, they know if they're able to get started or not, at least for us, every single new client that we work with, we start with a written financial, we call it our financial life plan, which we've actually trademarked, but it's basically fundamentally answering the question, are you on the right track, right? Like, is there a roadmap to let you know that you're going to achieve your goals in 5 years, 10 years, and through retirement? And that's really independent of what assets may come later on or what your income is, because I think a lot of even financial planners kind of work backwards, and the investments kind of become the plan. Right. And if the investments are doing well, if, you know, the market's up, all right, I'm in great shape. And if they're not, then not so much. Whereas we want to kind of work the other way. And everything we do starts with that plan, starts with that roadmap, that checkup. Similarly to when you go to a doctor, you know, that first doctor's appointment, you're not getting medicine for how you're feeling that day. Right. They're going to be asking you, you know, how are you sleeping? How are you eating? You know, are you in a relationship? Are you stressed at work? We need to run these 5 tests to figure out what's going on. And then after all of that work, all of that stuff, they're going to come back and say, hey, here's what we need to change from a dietary perspective, from, you know, from medicine perspective, from a lifestyle. And only then do you really get started on that next steps. That's kind of how we see our financial planning process. And again, I'm, you know, not everybody has to use the Drucker Wealth process, but I think focusing on the goals, on what we're focused on our cash flow, as opposed to just how much I have in the bank or what I'm making, is a way to get started, you know, the sooner, as opposed to waiting until you get to that point.
Oh, I think that's, you just gave like a great overview, because I think sometimes people are feeling like they should work with a financial advisor. I get to question all the time, but there's kind of this notion out there that, yeah, unless you have a ton of cash, that most people won't talk to you. And for a lot of planners, it might still be that way. I would, you know, thing I think that is really cool about younger planners is really they're kind of changing the dynamic a little bit and understanding that life is just different. We're different now. We, you know, we make money differently than maybe our parents or grandparents, and things just look a little bit differently. And there's all sorts of new cool ways that you can work with planners, you know, be it virtually or,
absolutely,
I mean, you name it. And it's just a whole different way of like having that experience. So I think it's always really good to like just reassure people that there are lots of different ways, if this is the help you really need, to get you pointed on the right path.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly.
Well, I'd love to just kind of sum it up a little bit. We've talked about so much, but I'd like to go back to this idea of Henry's. And maybe if you could encapsulate like one or two, three, maybe some different steps that Henry's, if they're fitting in this bucket, like what can they do right now, right after they listen to this episode to get themselves like in a better money situation or pointed in the right direction?
Right. So I've already harped on the whole writing your goals down thing. So they're like, everyone listening is, all right, we get it. Write down our goals. So I won't go on anymore about that specifically. But then after that, you know, the way we talk about saving money, you know, a lot of people say, well, what should I be cutting out of my budget or how to budget? And that really becomes the opening conversation. And I like thinking about it working backwards by saying, well, how much do I need to, not how much can I spend, but how much do I need to save to get to where I want to go? Does that mean I need to be saving 15% of my income, 20, 30, whatever that number is, and then starting the conversation by saying, all right, I need to commit to saving $1,500 a month, $2,000, $5,000, whatever that number is, and save that right off, right in the beginning. I like to call it paying yourself first, so that, you know, for example, for myself, the first of every month, I know 25 to 30% of what I'm taking in, I'm allocating and I'm saving for the future. And then I live off the rest, right? As opposed to writing every cup of coffee that I spend money on.
Yes.
And, you know, and figuring out my budget that way. I say, hey, I have this much money left over the month to spend on. So I don't need to worry exactly where it's going because I already know I've done what I needed to in order to pay myself first. So I think, you know, just kind of flipping that conversation, it makes saving money and planning for the future more of a priority instead of, well, if I have money left over at the end of the month, that's how much I'm going to save. And I, you know, thinking about it logically, like how much are we really going to save if it's that low on the totem pole of our financial priorities?
Probably not much.
Probably not that much. We always talk about, just as an example, if, you know, if I were to come, you know, for somebody listening, if I were to come to your apartment, your house, and say, hey, you know, your mortgage, your rent is going to go up $1,000 a month, $500 a month, first of every month, I'm going to come over, put out my hand, and you need to drop that, you know, those dollars in my hand, or we're kicking you out. And I say, would you move? And I do this at workshops. I had a workshop last week, and some guy in the back goes, yep, yeah, immediately. He's like, I would go get my luggage and just, you know, move out that second. But most of the time people say, nah, I'd be able to figure it out, right? I'd be able to save more. I know I'm spending money, you know, not in the best way here, here, and here. I would figure it out to stay in that apartment. And I always say, all right, well, cool. That means we know you have that $500 to save extra if it were more a priority, right? If it was something that we were thinking about and there was a goal attached to it. So just an exercise. And again, that doesn't work for everyone. Some people will say, no, I'm pretty much at my limit. I would move. But I think it sets a stage and sets us up for a deeper conversation.
I am a huge fan of the buckets of money approach that Gideon talked about. I talk about it all the time with my friends and they kind of look at me a little bit crazy, but the wealthiest people that I have experienced, that I have gotten to know in my lifetime, have this concept down pat. They have these buckets of wealth. So if one thing happens to one bucket of money, they don't freak out because they've got these other buckets. So I really think that strategy goes such a long way. And it's a very, very, very simple premise. But if you could understand it, I think it's really going to, I'm going to use the word revolutionize the way you think about money. So you can pick up Gideon's new book, How to Avoid Henry Syndrome, Financial Strategies to Own Your Future, on Amazon, everywhere books are sold. I'll have a link in the show notes. But the coolest thing I think is this. Gideon is donating 100% of the proceeds to an organization called Folds of Honor that provides educational scholarships to spouses and children of fallen and disabled service members. I don't really know anybody else who has done that with their book. So I think this is just a really amazing example of Gideon's heart. So my friend, we are changing up our language around money on this podcast to help everyone unlock the lives you want to live. Now you're part of this movement, so it's up to us all to invite other people into the journey. So share this episode with a friend, a family member, someone you know that really needs to hear this information about the Henry Syndrome and how to own your financial future. Invite them in so we can all have this really cool conversation about money in a new, fun, and fresh way.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Millennial Money. For all the behind the scenes on today's episode, make sure to check out the show notes. You can find all our episodes at mmoneypodcast.com. If you love this episode, share it with your friends and leave us a review wherever you listen to this podcast. See you back here in a few days with a fresh new episode.
We've all spent more time with family lately. It can feel like old times, but your mind is on the future too, and what you can do to shape it. At Sandy Spring Bank, we work with clients to help them grow and protect their money with wealth management, trust services, and insurance, so they can enjoy today and ultimately pass along their wealth. We believe real banking is a conversation. Let's talk about your dreams. Visit sandyspringbank.com/wealth. Wealth and insurance products are not FDIC insured, not guaranteed, and may lose value.